Instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Talk about it. That's poet Mary Oliver, and this is Everyday Wonder, a podcast where we turn down the volume on all the shouting that's going on these days so we can talk about the things that really matter. I'm Brett Will Taylor, and I am here with my co-host, Renee Peck.
Hello, Brett Will.
And our very special guest today, Sandra Russell Clark.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Sandra is a photographer whose work has been exhibited in Europe and across the United States, but she is also an artist whose photographs remind us both what the eye sees and the heart feels. While her work has been shown around the world, Sandra, like most smart people I know, calls New Orleans home. And today our topic is the wonder of little objects. And our inspiration actually came from one of Sandra's recent projects, which is called Juju. And the project includes very large pictures of very small objects that Sandra found in the immediate and longer aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So, Sandra, there is so much I am looking forward to us talking today about little objects from a spirit perspective, a personal perspective, and, of course, as part of the story of New Orleans. But first, maybe just tell us a little bit about Juju, the project.
Well, the project started in 2005, right after Katrina. We were living in the small town of Bay St. Louis, which is an hour outside of New Orleans. And, of course, like most people, we fled, and we were in Birmingham, Alabama, as we were watching the news unfold. And I remember an interview with Anderson Cooper on CNN, where he was in Past Christiane, and he was walking through the wreckage with a homeowner. And there was a scene, you know, everything was gone, the houses, the cars, everything. And then all of a sudden she reached down in the rubble and she pulled out this small ceramic object. It was a donkey with a pulling a little cart that maybe some household plant would have been in. And she just started sobbing with joy, though. And I thought, what a strange thing. Her house is gone. Everything's gone. And here's this little object, this little juju, you know, that she's just sobbing about. So that got me started thinking about it. Then after a couple of weeks later, we could return to Bay St. Louis. And walking through the wreckage there, I was just struck by how much had disappeared, how many things were gone, the cars and everything, but also struck by what was left. Small objects that told stories about their owners, like a group of dolls or a set of old tools, a rocking horse from childhood, little bric-a-brac jujus. People had gone around and started making little altars out of the objects.
Aww. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was really very touching. And that made me start thinking about objects in a different way. And it made me think, you know, about them more as a cultural portrait, you know, kind of looking at them both emotionally and intellectually anchored in memory.
You know, it's interesting. I have a friend who lived in Past Christiane, and his very nice, fancy house on Sandy Hook completely blew away. And when he went back, the only thing that was left on the lot was a picture frame. And there was no picture in the frame.
Yeah.
But the frame was there, and it was a small picture frame. And that was so meaningful to him. And I think the lesson we get in small objects left behind when disaster strikes is not always in the object itself, but in the fact that something remains, that we have a touchstone with things that were before
the
time divider. So I guess these were touchstones for people.
Yes, very much. As I started to collect the objects for the series, some were saved from Katrina, others were from friends' collections. The objects took on a whole new meaning. The objects became metaphors in the larger scheme of things, mourning and remembrance,
right.
History and culture, childhood and play, desire and longing. So they really became much bigger than just the object.
What was the first object you photographed? And I'm really curious as to why you took this little bitty object and blew it up to these massive, huge prints.
Well, I think that was because of the reactions that I saw during that time when people were discovering things that were still left and how important they were. And so, you know, it was really much bigger than just the object.
Right.
My first object was a little, it was about a 3-inch toy, a little rubber Buddha sitting very peacefully in his little gold robe with his eyes closed with a cup of chai and talking on the cell phone. And that,
which of course is what Buddhas do all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's an oxymoron.
Yes, and also, I mean, for that period, you know, we were so, you know, we had to do so much paperwork. We had to be on the telephone, you know, calling insurance companies and all that. And when I saw the little Buddha, he just made me so calm. And it's like, okay, this is how life is supposed to be. You have to
focus. I was never a Buddha on the phone in my 5 calls a day to my insurance agent.
No, me neither.
Where did you find the Buddha?
The Buddha was in Long Island, where we were staying
after. Where you were evacuated to.
Yes, our houses. Yeah, everything was destroyed. So we were staying there for on and off, coming back to New Orleans and to Bay St. Louis.
So Sandra, you mentioned seeing the story with Anderson Cooper and the woman reaching down for a small object. And, you know, Renee, as some of our listeners may know, you had a column that went on for years called This Mold House, which was about literally rebuilding your home after the 2 storms. And you've told me that most of the comments that came in were people talking about small objects.
Well,
is there something special about small objects?
Well, I mean, what people were looking at what they could salvage. And I agree with Sandra that it was a metaphor. If you could save this one item, it saved memories. It saved that piece of your life that was missing. So a lot of the queries I got were to, you know, if a photograph sits in water for a week, can you save it? If the silver has turned black that was my grandmother's, can you redip it or restore it? And so people were taking these objects and trying to rehabilitate them and wanted to know how to do that. And I can tell you exactly what the recipe is for getting rid of mold and other things. And by doing that, they were recapturing not the possession, but the little bit of their life that they could reclaim after this tragedy. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's also, I mean, people collect objects, and you never know really why they're collecting them. You know, like, why do they like this? Why did they like that? The thing that I found is as I took the small objects and blew them up larger, because some of the images...
And they, how large?
Yeah, they start at 20 by 24, and then they go up to 40 by 60. The little Buddha is 40 by 60.
So you're taking a 2-inch object and making it 5 feet wide.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And what I did is I photographed them on colorful backdrops, you know, because I felt like I wanted, you know, there was so much sadness in Katrina, and we've seen so much mud and mold, and I wanted to bring something of hope and joy and just life, you know, life goes on. So that's why that was part of it. But what I realized when I blew them up larger is I really started to look at the object like you look at something that you love, you know? And so those people that collected it, even though you don't understand why they do, when you start to see it bigger, you start to see the personality of the object, you know?
Does it change as it gets bigger?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that's a theme that runs through your work with this particular Juju collection, and that is that the objects you choose have a certain wittiness to them or a certain humor. And maybe that's one of the ways we get through tragedy is to find meaning in the mundane. The whole becomes much bigger than the part when you take something like this and blow it up. Are you trying to preserve things as they were? Or are you trying to create a new identity with these objects as you blow them up?
Well, I think I'm trying to just put them out there and let the viewer bring their own experiences to it when they look at the, you know, because everyone has a different experience with
it. Well, what I love is when I am listening to what you all say, and there is the emotional and the sentimental pull of things that were lost in the storm. But I think also to be clear to the exhibit, it's not only about Hurricane Katrina. Is
right.
that correct?
Yes.
And so what, you know, listening to you, what's interesting to me, Sandra, is the artist in you is asking people to take a closer look at those things that you don't notice. Because even the smallest thing has a personality, has a story to tell you. And the shaman in me wants to ask you all, was there something in that Buddha that was waiting for you in the stress of post-Katrina to say, honey, look over here. If I can be happy on a phone, so can you. I mean, do spirits move through objects?
Oh, I think absolutely.
And how so? What does that feel like to you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, That little object definitely came at the right time, you know. Wow. So I do feel that was important. And I have the 40 by 60 at the end of my bed so that I'm reminded every morning when I get up.
So beautiful. That's a ritual.
Yes, it is a ritual. But also I note a lot of the objects that I really loved were the hand-painted objects. So they've chipped and they've worn, you know, but they look like objects that have been well-loved, you know. And they're not always cheery, though.
But you know, I think so is love. Buddhists talk about that love has a fragrance. So again, do you think these objects are infused with a fragrance? I mean, is there something beyond the physical structure that calls you? Or that calls all of us?
I think objects are touchstones. And I think that they are connectors. And I think I don't live in your woo-woo world. I'm not a shaman. I'm thrilled I have a friend who is one.
I have a space for you.
Thank you. But I do have a ghost in my house. And my ghost is not a ghost that anyone, me or the five owners before me, have all had acquaintance with. None of us have seen Henry, the ghost. But what Henry does is move objects. So when my daughter lost her keys in the attic, I found them 3 months later in a kitchen drawer. And I think that that goes to the fact that objects are meaningful, not because of the little bits of wood and plastic they're made from, but because they serve as touchstones to our past, to our memories, also to our lives, to our aspirations, to our family, to who we are. So I think that even an object like the Buddha that you discovered that had no personal meaning to you became a touchstone to an emotion or a feeling or a need or a grieving process or something that answered a need in you. And to that extent, I do think objects are manifestations beyond just wood and plastic and paint and whatever they are.
Yeah, sometimes I always think about the creator of the objects too, especially the hand-painted porcelains, like the ranger, and also I have a matador that has these very flashy eyes, you know. Anyway, but when you look at them, they're all hand-painted, and each one is individually hand-painted. Then they're older objects, you know. And you see different personalities in it. You can have two in the same place, and they'll look totally different. You know, so I wonder how much is infused by the creator of the object also,
right?
That puts that...
That some of that spirit goes into the object itself.
And I love that because, again, I think the artist in you is encouraging we mere mortals to pause, to look carefully, right? I mean, there's a tenderness in hearing you talk about this, but there's also a preciousness. And I don't mean preciousness in a derisive way, but there's a preciousness... to how you hold them,
quality.
How you see them. Yeah, that that you see here. And I think that's fantastic.
I think it's interesting because I think all of us understand the wonder of objects. And I think we understand what that picture frame or that little donkey, ceramic donkey, meant to the people who owned it. I know, Brett Will, you have a die, half a pair of dice, that belonged to your grandfather that you carry around in your pocket. And the meaning of that is obvious because it connects you very materially to something that's very emotional. But one thing that I love about Sandra's project is that these are not objects that are known to her. These are objects that just speak to you beyond history. What are you looking for? Or what do you feel when you are drawn to an object?
I don't know. I think that's always a mystery. You know?
And I think that's right.
Yes. I think it's just some deep down connection, emotional or intellectual connection to an object or a shape or a color. I had a student of mine that became a painter, and she had a show, and she had small paintings. And there was one that I just loved. It just spoke to me. I don't know why. It was only a 4x4, and it was a sailboat, and it was lost in Katrina. And a few days before we left, I found it under some mud and cleaned it off. And that brings me peace when I look at the little, the little photographs.
Right. And that's the connection of objects in our history that we absolutely understand.
Right. But I also, it's interesting. I think I see it slightly different, Renee. You said you look at these as objects that had no connection to Sandra. And you said, but one. To me, given what you've just said, all of these, they have that universal connection of the human experience.
Yes.
And I think part of what an artist does in society is serve as a channel to remind us of that connection. Listening to this, I'm thinking people might hear some of the story of the aftermath of Katrina and your journeys, and they might think of these objects as ones that you found by chance. But when you and I first met each other and we talked about this, you used the word fate over and over and over again. And you talked about the fate of a storm, the fate of where an object landed, the fate of what caught your eye. And I think a lot of us use the word fate, but we probably don't have any clue what that means. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It is that mystery. Why do they show up at that time and that place, you know? And what do they, you know, why do they look familiar to you,
yep.
You know?
I want to just personally ask your advice, which is, you know, as a 53-year-old man that is now in charge of the house, the four-bedroom house that my mother had for 35 years, and that is filled with stuff, which has some objects of wonder. How do you sort through that? So the mystery calls you.
Yes.
Then are there steps? I'm going to play Renee Peck here and ask specific questions. You know, are there steps in how you respond, or when the mystery calls, do you just...
I grab it as fast as I can.
Yep.
Yes.
Literally and figuratively.
In a way, yes, yes. When you're clearing out somebody else's house, whether it's your mother or a loved one, the object has to speak to you.
Right.
I mean, if it doesn't speak to you, then I think it's better to share it
with the
world.
Put
it out in the world and see where it ends up with somebody that relates to it on that same kind of level.
Well, and also I'm struck by the fact that you know, we were talking about how objects connect us and how they speak to us and how they bring up memories and emotions and feelings. I'm struck by what Sandra said in that you don't have an intentional reaction for your art. You let the people who look at it draw from it and get whatever personal thing they can out of it. So you're a conduit, too, in the same way that the object is. In that you're bringing these small things to our attention to let us draw from them what we need to. So the individual object is just as distinct as the individual response, which as an artist you have, but also you convey.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, and also by blowing them up and making them larger makes people really take the time to look at it closer. Because for, you know, some small things like small photographs sometimes can really draw you in, and that's very beautiful. But sometimes with an object like this that's so tiny, to have it large really, you know, puts it up on a pedestal. And, you know, on some level, people can relate to the beat-up little ranger that's kind of sad and lonely, and, you know, the beauty queen doll that's now, you know, aging and and spotted and her hair's falling out. And, you know, I mean, I think that it's just life, you know. There are all these things, no matter whether it's the, you know, Chihuahua or Big Boy or Sammy, you know, it's just part of life. And I think sometimes people really relate to that, you know, to themselves.
To the imperfections.
To the imperfections.
Sometimes they're more interesting than the perfect
thing. Yes, it is.
I think of
absolutely.
I think of two things listening to that is beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
I also think of my mother, who we just had a thing between us, which was she had her hair done after months of recovering from surgery and has not wanted anything out of her house in the last 9 months. And the one thing she asked after having her hair done was, could you bring me my hair clips? And I had thrown her hair clips away soon after moving into the house because they were almost as old as my mother, and they were rusty and they were hideous. And my mother's response when I said I threw them away was, why would you do that? They were perfectly good hair clips. So to her, she looked, they were still beautiful.
Right.
They had a piece.
And you probably can't get them anymore.
No,
too,
thank God.
Because there's a lot of things that you can't get.
You
that
cannot
were
get them
very
anymore.
Good.
But
yeah.
Thank God my mother's neighbor, who is not quite as elderly as she is, did have literally a Sucrets tin of hair clips. So my mother has almost forgiven me. Sandra, Renee's place in this goes to the beauty and the perception, and I go to two words that you've used in the last couple of minutes, which is look and listen. Is what you're encouraging all of us to do is to look a little more and listen a little more?
Yes, I think that's part of it. Because we're so busy these days, especially nowadays, with all the cell phones and computers and bells and whistles going off. And so it's just to slow down and take time to look not only at the objects, but maybe at ourselves, you know, and how we relate to other people in the world, just as much as how we relate to objects.
Right, because we have wonder within ourselves as well.
Well, you know, I think nowadays we are so preoccupied with things. Things have to be perfect and big and expensive and whatever. I am not a person who likes clutter. I don't have little tchotchkes everywhere. But when things speak to me, they are meaningful. And I think the ones that you have chosen are meaningful. Do you keep lots of little objects around your house?
No. I have a few objects. And again, it's things that I find at a yard sale. There's a little blue horse that's in my bedroom that I look at every morning. He's up by the lamp, you know, and it's a little iron horse that used to be on the top of a gate. But for some reason, I was just drawn to him.
Right.
I love looking at him. He gives me joy every morning just looking at him. I have no idea why, but
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. And I think that's the beautiful piece of this is whether it looks beautiful to you or it looks beautiful to someone else, that you can't imagine how they see the beauty, whether you look a little more, whether you listen a little more, maybe it's just as simple as pay attention to what gives you joy.
Yes.
And look at that.
And surround yourself with things that give you joy.
Without too much, without clutter, because clutter is not always wonderful.
It gets lost in clutter. I can't do clutter either. Or I've been to homes where there's so much stuff. How do you even? And I think it's more that they like, oh, well, I have to have 25 marching soldiers or this.
Right,
you know,
collection sets.
And then everybody, you know, the objects lose their individuality.
It's like
their
being
uniqueness.
Polyamorous. Isn't one man enough for all of us? So,
yes.
But which will be another episode of Everyday Wonder. But Sandra, thank you so much for being here. And I would love to have you back sometime just to talk about the wonder of being a visual artist. I'm a word guy. Renee is a word woman. And I think we find wonder in words. That's why we're hosting a podcast. But I am fascinated with someone who I think experiences through what you see similar to what I experience in words.
And
so we'd love to have you back.
And the wonder of being
Thank
an artist,
so
what strikes me about Juju is that you have taken very ordinary, everyday, broken things and turned them into very large pieces of art that are beautifully rendered and thoughtfully presented and transforms that into something the rest of us can understand. And so for that, I applaud you and I thank you.
Thank you very much, Renee, and thank you very much, Brett, for having us here.
Absolutely, and thank you, listeners, for listening in, and we hope you will tune in and listen and look in next week on Everyday Wonder. Thank you.
There's no other place that I'd rather be. That puts a smile on my face. The world is a beautiful place. Such a beautiful place. Such a beautiful place.